Right, so we just saw this video that really just only gives us a glimpse of some of the largest religions that are scattered throughout all the world. And if you look just closely, a little closer at each one of them, you'll see that this idea of fairness and getting what we deserve ultimately is at the core of each one. And, you know, this isn't anything new. It's been going on since almost the beginning of religion. And, you know, there are people out there like Eckhart Tolle, who is Oprah's spiritual advisor, mentor, whatever title you want to put on him, who's teaching things like, you know, everybody has their own way and everybody has their own truth. And even his teachings boil down to fairness. You know, it's in everything we see, from Oprah and him all the way to The Biggest Loser. I've heard karma come up numerous times. And so we're in the middle of this world, I guess you could say, today's society, where we're getting all these statements about being fair and getting what we deserve just being shouted at us. We're being bombarded with all these statements. And it's very contradictory to what Jesus tells us. You know, shifting back to these world religions, in Hinduism, people believe that they're perpetually stuck in this cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. And it all comes out of how you live your life. You know, if you're a good person, you appease the gods that you believed in, then you're not going to have to go through it all again. But if you lived an awful life and you were a jerk to everybody, well, you get a second chance, but you're not going to come back as the same thing. You're going to be, you know, a bug or a spider or something that people don't really like. And Islam was another one on there. And Islam is spreading like crazy. You know, it's not just a Middle Eastern thing anymore. It's spreading throughout the U.S. and across Europe and Asia and even into Africa. And there are good things about Islam. Muslims are required by the Quran to give a certain percentage of their yearly income to the poor. You know, that's a great thing because they're helping out the people they know who are around them in their communities who need the money, who need help surviving. But no practicing Muslim knows for sure whether or not they're going to heaven or whether they're going to hell. All they can really do is follow every single law to the letter and just hope for the best. You know, Buddhism is another one. It's huge. It's growing also because the goal of Buddhism is to achieve nirvana. You know, nirvana is this state where you have no more desires, you know, no more fleshly desires, no more desire for food. You still eat because you have to, but it's also this state of being at one with the universe and just being, really. And the way you get there is by doing three things, so it's not too hard, really. But you have to lead a moral life, which is a great thing. I encourage all of you to do that. You're supposed to cultivate wisdom and, you know, make good choices. It's another great thing to do, so please do that. But you also have to perfect Buddhist meditation. And if any one of these three areas is subpar, just slightly, then you're not going to be able to achieve nirvana. Excuse me. And you're going to have to keep trying and trying and trying until you are willing to give enough to get what you deserve. Now, I mentioned Eckhart Tolle a little bit ago and the fact that he's teaching that everybody has their own way and their own truth. And he's saying that everybody can determine what truth is for themselves. And he's saying that, you know, you can make your own way to God, to Jesus, to heaven, to nirvana, or getting out of reincarnation, or whatever it is. It's all up to you. And he's saying, but at the same time, he's saying that there's this idea of fairness and karma at the center of it. That if you're not doing what you're supposed to, then you're not going to get what you deserve. Now, this isn't anything new. You know, nearly 2,000 years ago, when the Roman Empire ruled all the known world, they had a state religion, which was actually a cult. And what people would do is they would sacrifice to specific gods, so those gods would bless them. So this guy over here, he's a farmer. He would sacrifice to a certain god so that he would bless his harvest. Or this lady over here, she would sacrifice to a specific goddess because her kids are sick. And it's all about this, you know, we're going to get what we deserve if we do X, Y, and Z. And in the midst of that, Jesus comes along. And he stands up and says in John 14:6 that that's not right. He says, I am the way and the truth and the life. He takes this idea of fairness and getting what we deserve and turns it on its head. Because what he's really saying with this is that you can't make it on your own. You have to go my way. And, you know, you can't define truth for yourself. And what he said then greatly impacts what we think today. So if you'll pray with me, we'll go on. God, we're on this journey together to reset how we see you and your son and all that he said. God, you know the assumptions that we have, and you know, most likely a lot of our assumptions need to be changed. So I pray that as we go throughout this journey, God, that you help us to reset and reform how we see you. Open our eyes to what you really are and to what you're really all about. So towards the end of Jesus' ministry, he told a lot of stories. He told a lot of stories throughout his entire three-year ministry. And that's how a lot of people taught then. That's how a lot of people teach today. So one day, like I said, towards the end of his ministry, he's telling this story. It's about this wealthy farmer. He owns a vineyard, so he's a grape farmer. And so he's this farmer, and he gets up early one day, you know, probably 4 o'clock, about the same time a lot of the load-in guys got up today, and it's still dark outside. And he's going over his list. He's checking his fields and seeing what all he has to get done and checking quotas and this, that, and the other thing. And he realizes that he doesn't have enough guys who work for him on a regular basis to get everything done. So a little before 6 o'clock, which is when the Jewish workday started then, because that's when the sun came up, a little before 6, he went to the market, found this group of guys who hung around every day just waiting to get hired day by day and got paid the same amount every single day just so they could support their families. So he goes up to them and finds the best ones out there, the ones he thinks are going to work the hardest and get everything done. He picks them out and says, okay, I want you guys over here to come and work for me. I got a ton of stuff I need to get done today. I'll pay you a denarius. And now a denarius was a fair day's wage. This guy was all about the fair trade. He's the guy at Starbucks who buys nothing but the fair trade coffee, and he's buying pounds and pounds of it at one time just to give out to people to, you know, encourage them to be fair. And so he hires these guys, takes them back to his farm, and they get working. 3 hours go by, and he realizes they're not as hard of workers as he thought they were. So he's going to have to get more. So he goes back, and he finds the same guys who were still there, hadn't been hired by anybody, and goes up to him and says, hey, I know you haven't been hired yet. You're getting a late start, but I need you to come work for me. So they agree to, and he says, don't worry about what the pay is. It's going to be fair, so just come with me. It's going to be right. And they say, okay, no big deal. And so the same thing happens with these guys. They're not working as hard as he thought they were going to. And so he goes back to the market at noon and at 3. He goes 4 times already just to get more guys so he can hopefully get all this stuff done. And he tells them the same thing every time. You know, I got a ton of work I need to do. I'll pay you what's right. Just come and work for me for the day. So he's gone these 4 times. And then at 5 o'clock, he realizes that they're still not going to get done, even though there's only an hour left in the workday. So he goes back to the market one more time. I'm sure the people who were there are thinking that this guy's crazy because he just keeps coming and going, coming and going. And he finds the guys there who, I think the best way to describe them would be like, you know, the kids in gym class who didn't get picked for a team. And so the gym teacher just kind of says, okay, you guys go here and you guys go there. Okay, I guess I'm the only person who really had to deal with that. That's more embarrassing because there are more of you this hour than there were last hour. So please don't say anything about that. So anyway, he gets these guys and he says, come work for me. I know there's only an hour left. I'll pay you what's right, so just come and work. And they're thinking, you know, the economy's in this terrible condition. We really should go. We need the money so we can support our families. So they go and they work, and that hour goes by just like that. And 6 o'clock comes around, and he gathers everybody up so he can pay them their day's wage, you know, whatever they're expecting it to be. And so he gets these guys who he hired at 5 o'clock first and gives them a denarius and does that all the way down the line. And when he gets to the guys he hired at 6 a.m., they're thinking, oh, this is great. We're going to get extra money today because he paid the guys who only worked for an hour, you know, a denarius. That's a whole day's wage. We're going to get more. This is going to be wonderful. And then he gives them the same amount. And they get pretty ticked off about it, as I'm sure you can imagine, because they work 12 hours in that hot Middle Eastern sun thinking, well, at least it's only a dry heat. And so there, okay, that went over better than first hour. So that's good. So anyway, he gives them this denarius, and they get all bent out of shape about it because they're expecting more, because they deserve more. You know, they worked 12 hours, and these guys only worked 1. And so they bring it up with him, and they're complaining. And we get this guy's response in Matthew 20, verse 13. Jesus says, the landowner says, friend. Now real quick, friend here doesn't mean he was really friends with him. It was just a polite way of saying shut up at the time. So he says, friend, I'm not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? take your pay and go. I want to give the man who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous?" And you know, this is a radical thing that Jesus is teaching here. He's teaching that he's not fair and that God's not fair. Because people could very easily see who's who in this story. They could see that he's the landowner and that all of us here are the people who are hired at different points throughout the day. You know, some of us have been involved in church much longer than others. Some of you are here for the first time, and that's great. We're glad that you're here. But what he's saying is that these guys who were hired first are like the tight anal religious brother that Kurt talked about a few weeks ago in the story of the prodigal son. You know, the one who says, "I've been here all this time. I've always done everything right. I deserve more." And that's what these guys are saying too. They're saying, "I deserve what you're not giving me." And this week in your journals, you're going to see this quote that really, really just describes what Jesus was all about and what Jesus was teaching with this story. It's and this is what it is, if I can find my notes. Oh, here you go. It says, "Jesus wasn't interested in giving us what we deserve. In fact, it's the opposite. Jesus came announcing that God would deal with people not according to what they deserve, but according to grace. And thank God for that, because there is no way that any of us deserve to be in heaven." And, you know, we always think we want things that are fair because that's how we're raised. You know, we're raised to treat people fairly and not be prejudiced against anybody, and that's a great thing. We should not be prejudiced. But in that, we think that we should always get what we deserve. You know, we don't like hearing about presidential pardons because these guys decided to commit these crimes, but they're getting off scot-free just because they know somebody who's got some good authority. And, you know, we don't like to hear that. It's the same as death row convicts getting pardons also. Sorry, I had a little lapse in brain activity for a second. So they get these pardons every once in a while too, and we don't like to see it because, you know, they decided to commit these heinous crimes time and time again. They should get what they deserve. And this comes down, trickles down through every aspect of society, every single tier, even sporting events. You know, I can't remember a single Little League game of my own, let alone my brother's, where there weren't at least half a dozen parents screaming and shouting at the ump or ref or whoever about that not being a fair call and, you know, that the ump is blind and all this stuff. It's everywhere. And, you know, we hear about these Wall Street executives who are making more money than anybody ever needs to. And they're asking for bailouts for their companies from the government while there are thousands upon thousands of homes all across the U.S. being foreclosed on every single week. You know, it's not fair. We hear about them asking for these bailouts. You know, the CEOs of the three major auto companies here in the U.S. last fall, when they went to Washington to ask for these bailouts the first time, each one of them flew in on their own private jet. Doesn't seem like the best idea when you're asking for money. But, you know, it's not fair that they're making all this money and asking for more. And so, you know, regardless of what you think about this, about Octomom, but I'm just presenting some facts that I heard, so don't get upset with me. But she set up this website where people could go and donate money to her so she could, you know, take care of her 14 children. You know, that's a great thing that people are willing to do that because they're willing in this time where everybody's struggling a little bit to reach out and help someone else, somebody they don't even know. They're reaching out to help these 14 children. And so a lot of people were donating money and it was a great thing. But then we find out that she's buying makeup from Neiman Marcus. And we're thinking, you know, that's not fair. That's not fair to your kids because we donated this money to you so you could raise your kids properly. You know, this isn't fair at all. And, you know, just to make this a little more personal, I've got these two friends from school. I'll just call them Friend A and Friend B just in case they happen to listen to this. Now, Friend A and Friend B and myself, we all came into Lincoln at the same time. We lived on the same floor. We became really good friends. Friend A is my accountability partner, and Friend B was in my wedding. So they're these dear friends of mine. Now, Friend A, he's doing his internship, like I am, at a church in Illinois, except he's their youth pastor. And when he was first talking with this church, they said, you know, there's a chance that once your internship is done, this could turn into a full-time position. And he's thinking that's great. And he was telling Kristen and I about this. Kristen's my wife, for those of you who haven't met her. But he was telling us about this, and we're thinking, oh, you know, this is a great thing for you. We're excited. We're glad. But in the back of my head, I'm kind of thinking, you know, this isn't really fair. Because, you know, I've worked just as hard as you have while we've been here, and I've made, you know, similar grades, maybe a little better, maybe a little worse. I don't know what kind of grades he got. But I've worked just as hard, and you're already getting this full-time offer. And so Friend B, he's going to graduate a semester late, which is no big deal. A lot of students now are taking, you know, 5 years or four and a half to get out of college. It's not that big a deal. But he's already got his internship lined up at a church out in Philadelphia, also being the youth pastor. And they've told him already that he's got this full-time position lined up because he's worked with them before. And he's telling me this, and it's great for him. I know it's going to be a great fit. But he's telling me this, and in the back of my head, I'm screaming that this isn't fair. Because I'm just thinking, you know, I've gotten better grades than you this whole time. You know, I've worked my butt off. I've worked my butt off some to graduate on time and get the grades that I need. I deserve a full-time position when I'm done. You know, it's obviously not going to be here because there aren't any really positions open for me. And that's fine. But I deserve a full-time position somewhere. And he's already got this job lined up, and he's graduating, you know, half a year late. And I'm just screaming that this isn't fair, because we always want what we think we deserve. And we always want to hear about what's fair and people getting their own and, you know, getting what you get, getting what you give. And, you know, I've got to ask this question. Do we really want what we deserve? In Romans chapter 3, the Apostle Paul writes that, you know, everybody has sinned and nobody can live up to what God expects of us. And, you know, if it was left at that, then heaven would be an extremely empty place. Nobody would be able to make it on their own merit. But, you know, fortunately in verse 24, he goes on to finish that statement and he says, it's because of Jesus, it's because of his grace that we are saved. It's because of that single action, that single night, on single day on the cross, sorry about that, that heaven's not going to be empty. It's going to be this beautiful place where it's packed full of people who love God and love Jesus, and all they want to do is be there. And, you know, that is a radical thing. I'm sure all of you know that U2 released a new album this week. I haven't heard the whole thing. I've heard it's amazing from PJ. I've only heard little bits and pieces, like I said. And I like to read things that Bono has said and hear things that he says, because he's a pretty interesting guy, and some of it's a little out there. But PJ emailed me this quote from Bono that really, really depicts, you know, what we're talking about here today. This fact that Jesus is not fair by any means. And in this quote, Bono says, you see, at the center of all religions is the idea of karma. You know, what you put out comes back to you, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, or in physics, in physical laws, every action is met by an equal or an opposite one. It's clear to me that karma is at the very heart of the universe. I'm absolutely sure of it. And yet, all along comes this idea called grace to upend all that. As you reap, so will you sow stuff. Grace defies reason and logic. Love interrupts, if you like, the consequences of your actions, which in my case is very good news indeed, because I'd done a lot of stupid stuff. But I'd be in big trouble if karma was going to finally be my judge. I'd be in deep, you know, deleted expletive there. It doesn't excuse my mistakes, but I'm holding out for grace. I'm holding out that Jesus took my sins onto the cross because I know who I am. And I hope I don't have to depend on my own religiosity. See, Bono gets it. He gets the fact that in all these other world religions that he's seen firsthand, you know, traveling the world, that fairness is deeply rooted in us and deeply rooted in these religions. And he understands that doesn't matter, that Jesus is not fair. Grace is not fair. And so, if this is your first time here today, thanks for coming. And I'd like to ask you, do you need a Jesus that isn't fair? I know I do. And for those of you who have been here numerous times and have been involved with the church for a long time, I want to ask you that question I just asked a second ago. do you really think you want what's fair? You know, because think about that. None of us can make it on our own. The Apostle Paul tells us that. Jesus tells us that. We can't do it by our own merit and by our own, you know, religious acts. You know, everybody needs this unfair grace, even pastors, leaders at any level. You know, nobody's perfect. We all have these things that we don't want to be judged for. And I personally hope that, you know, when my time comes and I'm not being judged by karma or fairness or, you know, that I'm not going to get what I deserve. Because I am ecstatic about the fact that Jesus is not fair. Because since he's not fair, we are going to be able to make it to heaven. We are going to be able to spend eternity surrounded by those other people who get the fact that Jesus isn't fair.
You know, we begin to think about Jesus as being unfair. You know, it doesn't set well with all of us. Because, you know, when we look all around our culture, as Dan kind of laid out for us, we like fairness, right? And we see things, and we cry foul. And I was reminded this week, as you know, many of you may have been impacted by this, about the student across the street at Fall Creek Elementary, 6-year-old student who nearly drowned last weekend and then later passed earlier this week. You know, we have over 20 kids who go to school over there, and it just set hard with many of us. You know, we cry out, man, God, this isn't fair. This isn't fair. We cry foul. In fact, I was having a conversation with my neighbor in the backyard, and he just said, you know, can you imagine not seeing your son alive again? And it just hits hard. You know, it's hard to make sense of that. It's hard to make sense of where that is. And I had another conversation with a friend who said, you know, as Christians, we oftentimes turn to God in those moments and say, God, you're not fair. Well, maybe that wasn't God's fairness being exercised in that moment. Maybe that was the brokenness of life. Maybe that was just life. Because the picture that Dan painted for us today is this God who says, I don't give you what you deserve. And so, in those questions of what he asks us, I want us to just take a moment and go to God and say, God, where do I need you in an unfair way? So let's pray. God, we lift this family, Matthew Orsk's family, up. This little 6-year-old boy who is no longer living with his family here on earth, God. We don't understand everything around that. We know there's a lot of pain there. We have a lot of questions ourselves, and yet, God, we just lift them up to you. We support them today and want you to be very near to this family, God. And it's just a reminder, God, that life is not fair. And God, sometimes we think if we do enough things that eventually things will come back around our way, and yet, God, we see that that's not exactly how it works. So God, as we stand here today, as we think about our own lives, as we think about our own brokenness, about the places where we're barely hanging on, maybe choices that we've made that have created brokenness, it's easy to get on our high horse, God, and say, God, I want exactly what I deserve, and yet, God, we really don't want that. So God, we ask that in this moment, you will meet us in our brokenness. You'll meet us in those moments where we need something beyond what's fair. God, that you'd meet us in those places where all we need is grace. Where, God, maybe we can realize that, like the gracious landowner, God, that you are a God of goodness and blessing. God, we need that today. So, God, we sing about this. We celebrate this. It's something that we get excited about, God. So we sing Hosanna. Because you are a God, God, who does not give us what we deserve.